Disc 6. Chapter 41. Chris stared through the open shutters of the ship's forward screen and marvelled at the infinite universe. He was heading away from Earth, from everything he knew, out into the stars. It was his boyhood dream come true in a way he had never expected. He gave a sigh of satisfaction.
"Will you stop doing that?"
asked the doctor. He was sat cross-legged on the floor next to K9.
"Sorry," said Chris. "I didn't know I was doing anything."
He gestured to the stars.
"Look at that. Just look at that."
"I am looking at it," said the doctor, as another star system flew past. "And I don't like the look of it. We're going a bit casually for my liking. Bit of a Sunday service, if you ask me, though I suppose it is Sunday." He called out loudly.
"Ship, how long will this journey take?"
39 astrosidereal days, said the ship primly.
"What?"
the doctor exclaimed.
"That's nearly 3 months."
The ship sniffed.
"That is at full warp drive, and we have hundreds of light years to cover."
"Hundreds of light years," said Chris. "In 3 months? That's an incredible speed."
"Yes, it's incredibly slow," said the doctor.
He pondered for a moment, then called.
"Ship, do you have the power to adjust your own inner circuitry?"
"Yes," said the ship. "Yes, I can do that."
"I thought you might," said the doctor.
"Being created as you were by someone with an interest in Gallifreyan technology."
"Yes, my precious Lord Skagra,"
sighed the ship.
"I do miss him, you know."
"We all do," said the doctor. "Right then, ship, stop."
"Please clarify,"
said the ship.
"Stop what?"
"Stop," said the doctor. "Cut all engines. Halt."
The faint vibration of movement died away, and Chris watched as the stars outside slowed and then fixed on one beautiful image, a nebula of unimaginable size and variety of colour.
"What's she doing?"
asked Chris, stifling another sigh of wonder.
"I'm going to introduce this ship to a few new concepts," said the doctor. "Fortunately, it's halfway there already."
"I have accomplished your request," said the ship.
"Good," said the doctor.
He cleared his throat.
"Now, ship, please regrade your de-oscillation digretic synthesizers by 10 points.
The ship gasped.
"I cannot do that. The drive will explode."
"Nonsense, it's perfectly safe," said the doctor.
"Master,"
said K9 warningly. The doctor huffed.
"What now, K9? Nobody asked for your contribution."
He cut himself off.
"Wait a minute, did I just say 10 points?
"Yes," said Chris.
"Affirmative,"
said K9.
"You did, yes,"
said the ship. The doctor wiped the back of his hand over his chin and swallowed.
"Well, obviously I meant -10 points, otherwise the drive would explode."
"I am complying,"
said the ship. There was a chatter of electronic activity. Chris barely noticed. He was staring at the nebula, open-mouthed. The only thing that spoilt his perfect view were those three irritating red lights winking on and off in his peripheral vision, now ever so slightly faster.
"Accomplished,"
said the ship.
"De-oscillation digretic synthesizers regraded by -10 points.
"Good," said the doctor. "Now, ship, please realign your maxivectometer on drags so it cross-connects with your radio bicentric anodes."
There was another burble of electronics.
"Accomplished,"
said the ship.
"Good," said the doctor. "Now, here comes the difficult bit. Please switch your conceptual geometer from analog to digital mode and keep triggering feedback responses until you get a reading of 75-839.
"Accomplished,"
said the ship.
"And for your information, Doctor, that bit wasn't so difficult at all."
The doctor took a deep breath.
Now, let's see if it works. Ship, activate all realigned drive circuits. The electronics chattered incessantly.
Ooh,
said the ship.
Something very strange is happening.
She giggled.
Very strange. Ooh.
Don't worry, my dear. Keep going, insisted the doctor. Chris leapt out of his seat as the view on the forward screen suddenly shifted. The nebula blurred and was replaced by a shifting, whirling blue vortex. At the same time, there was a sound not unlike the painful grinding of the TARDIS's engines, though much softer and smoother.
Ooh,
said the ship, sounding to Chris like she was licking her lips.
Ooh, Doctor. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Bingo, cried the Doctor, punching the air. What have you done again? Asked Chris, who was mesmerised by the swirling blue vortex, but felt sure the Doctor wanted to explain how clever he'd been in more detail. The Doctor smiled. I've only gone and constructed a primitive form of relative dimensional stabiliser by remote control. Oh, good, said Chris. So, any journey, however far we go, will only take a couple of hours relative time. He beamed. Pretty clever, don't you think, everybody? Very, said Chris.
Affirmative, Master,
said K-9. When the ship spoke again, she had a slightly different, warmer tone.
For a dead man, Doctor, you are extremely ingenious.
Yes, well, let's not harp too much on that aspect, shall we? Said the Doctor. Yes, well done, said Chris. I just wish you could turn those red lights off. They're very irritating. What red lights? Asked the Doctor. Those ones, said Chris, pointing them out. They've been annoying me ever since I came in here. But I didn't want to mention them, as it's probably nothing. The Doctor vaulted over to the panel where the red lights flashed. Ship, please explain the significance of these lights.
How should I know?
Said the ship.
My Lord Skagra activated that panel shortly before his departure. It is outside my schematics.
The Doctor beckoned K-9. Here, boy, what do you make of this? Come on, I'm asking for your contribution. K-9 extended his probe and scanned.
Alert, Master! This ship has been timed to explode in precisely 1.43 minutes.
What? Cried the Doctor and Chris.
The ship has been primed to explode,
repeated K-9. Skagra wanted to cover his tracks, surmised the Doctor. He called upwards, Ship, please disable the explosive mechanism now.
Now, how can I do that?
Asked the ship coyly.
I've got no interface with those particular circuits, as decreed by my gracious Lord Skagra.
Your gracious Lord Skagra wants to blow you to atoms, called the Doctor. The ship paused.
I cannot believe that, Doctor. I am his truest and most trusted servant.
If it's a bomb, shouldn't we defuse it, Doctor? Asked Chris. The Doctor whipped out his sonic screwdriver, adjusted the settings, and ran it swiftly along the side of the panel, cutting a smoking square through the smooth white material. Sorry if it hurts.
Ow!
Cried the ship. No time to be gentle, said the Doctor. He wrapped his hand in one of the ends of his scarf and wrenched aside the burning plate. Beneath the panelling, Chris saw a maze of thin interconnected fibres like a bowl of dry vermicelli. Red light throbbed from somewhere underneath the tangle.
Time to detonation, now 54 seconds, Master,
said K-9. Thanks for that, K-9, said the Doctor. He held the glowing tip of the sonic screwdriver above the fibres. Which one do I cut? How should I know, said Chris and the ship at the same time.
Time to detonation, now 30 seconds, Master,
said K-9.
What?
Spluttered the Doctor. It was 54 seconds a couple of seconds ago. Does it matter? Said Chris. Just cut them all. Do it!
The doctor stared at Chris, apparently rather struck by his sudden hot temper.
Good idea,
he said, and he jabbed the sonic screwdriver down into the mass of fibres. There was a crackle of energy and a sound like popping corn. The fibres twanged and split.
Well,
called the doctor in the sudden silence that followed.
Crisis averted, Master,
said K9.
The detonation sequence has been aborted.
The doctor mopped his brow and switched off the sonic screwdriver.
Well, there we are.
Chris was trying to piece together what had just happened.
So, Skagra set the ship to explode, he said.
More than just the ship, said the doctor.
He indicated the burnt ends of the tangled fibres.
There was enough thermal energy generated by that thing to destroy an entire planet.
Well, he was going to wipe out Cambridge.
Chris was horror-struck.
All the colleges, the barracks, the railway station, the pubs.
Plus the entire planet, said the doctor gravely.
Chris flared up. He found himself squaring up, his nostrils flaring in anger.
He was going to kill Claire?
The words burst out of Chris's mouth before he had a chance to think about what they told him about his subconscious. The doctor raised an eyebrow.
And all the other lovely girls, plus the lovely boys. He must have considered it safer just in case we'd sent off a message to the Time Lords.
He sighed.
Which we perhaps should have done.
No way, said Chris. They would probably have come and torched the place anyway.
He frowned.
You know, before today, I always thought Earth was a safe kind of a planet.
The doctor raised his other eyebrow, as if Chris had said something incredibly stupid.
Anyway, not to worry, he said, getting to his feet. Thanks to me, the ship is safe, and we're on our way.
I can't accept that, Doctor,
said the ship. Her voice was tremulous, as if she was on the brink of bursting into tears.
My Lord Skagra is infallible. If he wished me...
She paused, gulped, and gathered herself.
If he wished me, his truest servant, to be destroyed, well then, I must have been destroyed.
Well, if that's the way you want to see it, said the doctor cautiously.
It's the only way I can see it,
said the ship bravely.
You were already dead, of course, Doctor. Now we all are.
Oh, this is
began Chris. But when he saw the doctor's hand raised as if to clamp over his mouth again, he stopped.
I've exploded,
said the ship. The doctor patted the open panel.
Of course you have, dear. There, there.
Chris looked grimly out of the forward screen and into the vortex.
Worrying, isn't it?
Which it in particular?
Asked the doctor.
Well,
said Chris, nodding upwards.
What else isn't she telling us?
In the small generation chamber, deep in the bowels of the ship, the newly formed Krag stirred. One rocky claw clasped the edge of the tank, and it hauled itself upright. Chapter 42. Krag after Krag after Krag marched from the generation chamber into the observatory. Romana, a head bowed, stood beside Skagra, who was manipulating controls at the central console. The sphere sat on top of the cone, burbling to itself.
Now, said Skagra, you shall see that though the doctor is deceased, his mind lives within the sphere.
A hollow screen flickered into life above the console. Romana looked up despondently, and to her astonishment, she saw herself. She was smiling brightly, leaning against the door of the TARDIS.
You see what was uppermost in his mind, said Skagra. He was very...
He searched for the word.
Fond of you.
Romana looked around at the gathering Krags.
Well, that's hardly important now, she said flatly. You were right. I've no choice but to accept your dominion over me. Skagra turned his head slowly to look at her. I wonder if you are telling me the truth. What could I possibly hope to gain by lying to you? She asked. She looked up at the stars. You spoke about entropy, the long, dark nightmare at the end of the universe. She turned back to Skagra. Have you really found a way to stop it?
I have, said Skagra. The ultimate answer. I will bring purpose and order. I will save the universe from itself, from chaos.
I'm trying to understand you, I swear, said Romana. But how can I begin to believe it if I don't even know who you are? Skagra relinquished his place at the controls.
You are familiar with the planet Drawnid, he said stiffly.
Romana nodded. It was the scene of an incident in Gallifreyan history.
An incident, said Skagra.
He tilted his head to one side.
I admire your understatement. It is an excellent quality.
Thank you, said Romana.
Many thousands of years ago, there was a schism in the College of Cardinals on Gallifrey. Cardinal Thorak fled to Drawnid, declared himself president of the Time Lords, and established a rival court there, where he became known as the Heresiarch of Drawnid, Skagra continued. Eventually, Thorak returned to Gallifrey.
Romana nodded, thinking back to her history lessons.
The High Council forced him to return by simply ignoring him.
Skagra's eyes narrowed.
And do you know what happened on Drawnid, Time Lady, both during and after the reign of the Heresiarch?
Romana searched her memory. Well, there was no mention of that on my history syllabus at the Academy. Skagra grunted and his hands flew over the controls. The hollow screen shifted to show another image.
Then it is time for me to expand your learning. This was Drawnid during the reign of the Heresiarch.
The hollow screen showed the wide vista of a city that nestled in a large valley. Towering over the buildings was an enormous statue of a hook-nosed man in the robes of a Time Lord president.
The Heresiarch controlled the planet from the statue. He set up a pacification beam from his court within, quelling any unrest or resistance from the native populace.
The image shifted again as Skagra manipulated more controls. Now Romana saw the crowded streets of the city from ground level, with the statue looming down from on high. The citizens of Drawnid shambled happily along the streets, dumb smiles on their faces.
Drawnid, at this time, was an advanced civilization. Late level 9, early level 10, continued Skagra. But the day came, after several hundred years, when Thorak, as you say, left to return to Gallifrey.
The screen now showed an aerial view of the city. Tiny figures teemed through the streets.
The pacification ray was switched suddenly off, said Skagra. The people of Drawnid suffered a severe psychic feedback. The centuries of quiet subservience were over, and all the accumulated aggression and unrest spilled back into their minds. They tore their own planet apart.
Romana watched as the view changed back to the wide view of the city, now sparking with flames. Burnt-out buildings toppled. There were distant cries of anger and terror. Finally, the great statue of Thorak itself was dragged over, smashing into the city below with a colossal crash. Romana put a hand to her mouth.
That's terrible, she said. I'm so sorry for your people.
Skagra's nostrils flared.
They are not my people, nor should you be sorry. This is merely historical background. It happened, as you say, thousands of years ago.
Well, so what does it have to do with you?
Asked Romana. Skagra adjusted the controls again.
When I was born, this is what Drawnid had become,
he said gravely.
Romana turned her eyes back to the screen, expecting to see some hellish, blasted wilderness. Instead, she saw lush, tropical beaches and wide, tree-lined boulevards through which people in shorts and sandals walked happily.
It looks quite nice, said Romana.
Nice, said Skagra. This is the sick, degenerate, purposeless world I was born into. Drawnid, the so-called top holiday destination of Galactic Quadrant 5. Primary export? Beachwear. Primary import? Ice cream. The planet of fun.
Must have been awful for you, said Romana.
Skagra searched her face.
Do you mock me?
Of course not, said Romana.
Nobody was interested in the past, Skagra went on. Nobody was interested in anything but their mindless, futile diversions. It was I who unlocked the secrets of the planet's history. I who excavated the site of the great statue of Thorak. I who discovered the abandoned papyri in the ruins and restored them.
The hollow screen switched again to show a grainier image. Skagra, presumably accompanied by the remote video camera that had captured these pictures, was clambering over dusty rubble in a deep, dark cavern. With a mighty effort, he pushed aside a huge chunk of rock and revealed beneath an almost perfectly preserved lower chamber. Romana saw the seal of Rassilon, the emblem of the Time Lords carved into one wall. The chamber was filled with books and scrolls. It had obviously been the library during the reign of the Heresiarch. The image of the younger Skagra skipped forward almost eagerly down into the chamber.
So that's how you know so much about the Time Lords, said Romana.
Skagra nodded.
And from that information, I formed my plan. I made my preparations over long years. I established this asteroid as my command station. I obtained the sphere. I had almost everything I needed.
Except the book? Prompted Romana.
Except the book, said Skagra.
How did you know that Chronotis had stolen it from Gallifrey? Asked Romana. Surely only he knew that.
At first I intended to steal the book from the Panopticon archives, said Skagra.
Romana blanched.
Gallifrey's very well defended.
I know that, said Skagra. There is no conventional method to gain entry, so I chose an unconventional method.
He adjusted the controls, and the image of a thin, hysterical-looking young woman in tattered red robes appeared on the holoscreen. Her face and hands were covered in henna tattoos, a mystical scrawl.
A visionary, Romana guessed.
One of the sisters of Khan, said Skagra, a powerful seer. I used the juice of the lethe flower, an anti-telepath drug known as Synaptrol, to drain her powers and steal her away. When she awoke, she was my prisoner.
The image changed again to show the young woman inside the Zero prison of Skagra's ship.
I ordered her to take me, undetected, into Gallifrey, said Skagra. But she taunted me, said I would not find the book there.
Romana took a deep breath.
What did you do to her?
Skagra nodded to the screen.
I withheld food and water until she told me where to find the book.
The screen showed the young woman writhing on the floor of the prison. The image was silent, but Romana could see the visionary was railing up at Skagra, cursing him.
Of course, said Skagra. She was protected from death by the elixir her sisterhood so jealously protect. But I am a very patient man. I waited for years until the pain became unbearable to her. Eventually, she told me how Chronotis had stolen the book, how it was hidden in an obscure place called Cambridge.
And then I disposed of her.
How? Asked Romana.
It is not important, said Skagra.
How?
I merely ejected her into space.
Romana shuddered. I suppose you had no further use for her, she said steadily.
Correct, said Skagra. I needed her only to find the book, and with the book, I shall find Sharda.
What is Sharda? Asked Romana. And what's the book got to do with it?
You really don't know, do you?
Said Skagra, looking almost amused.
Another historical item that dropped off your syllabus.
He turned back to the screen, touched the sphere, and the image reverted to the smiling face of Romana.
Somewhere in the doctor's mind, buried so deeply perhaps even he is unaware of it, is the secret, he went on. I am convinced he knows the code.
Well, I wish I could help you, said Romana. But I need to know more. She stood closer to Skagra and put an arm on his shoulder.
You've been so alone. Perhaps I can share in your great purpose.
Skagra flinched as she touched him.
I would like that to be so, he said eventually. You are not the same as other people.
Romana touched him gently on the cheek.
I am like you.
She held out her hand. Skagra's gloved hand took it.
Suddenly, with all of her considerable strength, Romana swung Skagra's hand around until it hovered over a large button on the control console.
From the corner of her eye, she had seen it and worked out that it was the entry coder for a self-destruct sequence undoubtedly keyed only to Skagra's touch. She forced his hand down towards the button. Skagra fought back, wrenching his hand free. He took a step back and with a snarl, froth foaming at the corners of his lips, he smacked her across the face.
Duplicitous time witch!
He shouted. Several Krags advanced.
Shall we destroy her, my lord?
Asked the commander.
Yes!
Cried Skagra, wiping flecks of spittle from his mouth. Romana screwed up her eyes as the Krags surrounded her, their arms outstretched, burning auras of heat formed at the tips of their claws.
No!
Shouted Skagra. The Krags lowered their hands. Skagra shook himself, returning to his normal self.
She may still be of use. Guard her well.
He turned back to the controls.
I must find the code.
He said,
I will find the code.
Chapter 43. The grinding engine noise made by a TARDIS was now almost familiar and reassuring to Chris. He stared out of the forward screen as the swirling patterns of what the Doctor had described as the space-time vortex dissolved back into a vision of the endless stars. The ship was slowing to a halt alongside a huge, dark, multi-decked structure, roughly circular in shape. The detail of the hull of the space station, if that was what it was picked out as it revolved slowly in the light of a nearby red sun. It looked shabby and deserted.
Commencing docking procedure, said the ship. Though I don't know quite why, as we're all dead anyway. Though I suppose I was technically never alive. Hey-ho.
Chris felt the ship turn around, presumably to align itself with a docking port on the side of the space station.
Well, wherever it is, we're here, said the Doctor.
While Skagra is presumably going in the opposite direction, said Chris.
Worrying, isn't it? Said the Doctor. But it's the only thing we can do.
Haven't you any idea what he's after?
Sharda,
said the Doctor, looking out at the stars as the ship continued its manoeuvres.
It would definitely help if we knew who Sharda was.
Who or what? Said Chris. The Doctor ruffled his fingers through his mop of curly hair.
Sharda, for something at the back of my mind. He held up a finger.
Wait a moment. Sharda! Isn't she a singer?
Suggest the master is confusing Sharda with Sharday.
Canine burbled. The doctor's face fell.
Oh, yes, he said. Never mind.
Never heard of her, said Chris. Not that that counts for much.
She is an earth singer from your future, young master,
said Canine helpfully.
Well, that's all right then, said Chris. That means everything's all right.
The doctor glared at him.
What are you talking about?
Well, said Chris, if there's a future, we know, don't we?
We know what?
That everything's going to be all right. Chris rubbed his hands excitedly.
Whatever happens to us, at least the Earth and the universe are safe if there's a future where people can sing and be famous.
The doctor looked sadly across at him.
I wish it worked like that.
Oh, said Chris. You mean it doesn't?
No, said the doctor. Anyway, never mind about the future. Whatever Skagra is up to, we have to stop him. Mind control is the most terrible thing. Any physical threat you can fight, but once someone has control of your mind, you've lost everything.
He stopped, as if surprised by his own words.
That's very odd.
What is? Asked Chris.
Why did I say that? It's as if my subconscious mind was trying to push something up to the surface.
He blinked.
Now it's gone.
Don't think about it, Chris advised him. Then maybe it'll come back to you.
I should know the answer,
said the doctor loudly in one of his sudden explosions. He tapped his head.
Perhaps somewhere in the back of my mind, I do know the answer.
The ship rumbled along the side of the hull. A hidden doorway in the long corridor outside the command deck swung smoothly open. The Krag emerged. It heard voices from the command deck.
It's about time I worked out the answer,
one of the voices was saying. It turned and trod slowly and heavily towards the source of the voices. Chapter 44. Romana stood encircled by her Krag guardians. Skagra was at the control console, accessing the doctor's mind. The holoscreen showed rapidly flickering images of the book and recent events. She saw herself, Chris, K9, the professor, a young woman who must have been Chris's friend Claire. Romana rubbed her cheek. It was still tender from Skagra's attack. She looked sadly at the screen and saw herself and the professor sipping tea in his warm, comfortable study. It seemed inconceivable that that had been only a few hours ago. Now the professor, and possibly the doctor too, were dead.
Concentrate, said Skagra, his hand on the sphere. Your great minds can discover the answer. Let your minds be guided. Concentrate.
The hollow screen fixed on an image of the open book as the doctor flicked through it.
What's so important about the book anyway? Asked Romana.
Skagra shot her an impassive glance.
It is the worshipful and ancient law of Gallifrey. What does a Gallifreyan judge say when passing sentence?
Romana thought. We but administer. You are imprisoned not by this court, but by the power of the law. Skagra reached inside his tunic and held up the book in his white-gloved hands.
That used to be quite literally true.
Romana frowned. She was trying to formulate a response when the sphere burbled and Skagra's interest returned to the screen. The image had frozen on the open pages of the book, and a single word was flashing at the bottom of the picture again and again.
Insoluble. Insoluble. Insoluble.
Skagra thumped his fist on the control.
No!
He cried.
The code is insoluble!
He stepped back from the console, looking shattered and drained. Sweat poured from his forehead.
My plan cannot proceed.
he said at last, seemingly suddenly like a lost little boy.
I'm glad you realize it, said Romana. It's about time.
Skagra turned on her.
You are a Time Lord, he said, a cunning glint coming into his eye. Somewhere in your mind, you know the answer. I shall not use the sphere this time. I shall dissect your living consciousness, pluck it apart, cell by cell.
Romana stood firm. You've lost, Skagra. It's all over. But Skagra did not reply. Instead, he pointed to her, his lips moving silently.
What did you say? About time?
He said at last. He swung back to the console.
Time! Yes, I should have seen that. A Gallifreyan code would have to include the dimension of time.
Skagra replaced his hand on the sphere.
Concentrate,
he ordered, fixing all his attention on the screen.
Find me the Doctor's last reference to time.
Chapter 45.
Oh, come on, ship, called the Doctor. What's taking you so long?
These docking safety procedures are very important, said the ship haughtily. Though frankly, I don't know why I'm being so careful, as we've all long since shuffled off this mortal coil. Habit, I suppose?
There was a loud clang as the ship finally docked with the space station. Chris's attention was elsewhere. He sniffed the air.
Can you smell burning?
Of course not, said the Doctor. Right, let's go.
He hurried over to the door and pressed the panel marked open. The door opened. A huge, burning figure stood before him, eyes glowing like a furnace. It spoke with a deep, rumbling voice, forming words as if for the first time.
Who are you?
Oh, said the Doctor. No cold callers, thank you.
He reached for the button marked close. As the door started to slide back into place, the creature strode forward and ripped the door apart with its powerful claws as if it were made of polystyrene. The creature stalked through the door. Chris could feel the intense aura of heat radiating from it. He dashed to join the Doctor as he attempted to sidle past the creature.
What on earth is it? How am I supposed to know? Said the Doctor. And what's Earth got to do with it? Ship, what is it?
It is a Krag, said the ship. It was formed automatically when I took off without my great lord Skagra aboard. Standard emergency procedure.
Well, why didn't you tell us? Exploded the Doctor.
You didn't ask,
said the ship with what it obviously considered sweet reason.
Anyway, it hardly matters, does it? Can't do us any more harm. We're dead. And it must be too.
You are intruders,
said the Krag. The Doctor shrugged.
Well, actually, I'm the Doctor and this is Bristol.
He gestured to the smoking trail left by the Krag.
Now that's what I call a carbon footprint.
You trespass on my lord's ship,
said the Krag.
You shall die.
It raised one arm, which ended in grotesque, lumpy claws. The tips of the claws glowed red hot.
So there are some aliens that don't look like us, said Chris.
It was the only thing he could think of to say. And even as he was saying them, he realized what incredibly rubbish last words they were.
K-9, what's keeping you? Shouted the Doctor.
K-9 shot forward, nose blaster extruded. The powerful red laser beam shot from it, blasting the Krag square in the centre of its chest. The Krag reeled back. Chris had a moment of relief. Then the Krag growled terribly and raised its arm again.
You shall die.
Silly thing, we're already dead, said the ship. I always thought those Krags were a little slow on the uptake.
K-9, continuous fire,
shouted the Doctor. K-9 blasted his laser again, and this time the bright red beam was sustained,
beating the Krag back.
Good boy, K-9, called the Doctor.
The laser beam started to sputter and weaken. The Krag roared, flailing its arms in anger.
Master!
Called K-9 urgently.
This unit cannot contain Krag creature with blaster at maximum power. Battery depleting.
Hold on, K-9.
The Doctor knelt down and ripped off the side casing of the robot dog.
We need a power feed, he shouted to Chris over the roar of the laser. Any power feed.
Chris grabbed at the tangle of fibres from the exposed panelling.
Will these do?
The Doctor grabbed them and shoved the bundle roughly into a small socket inside K-9.
He's supposed to be universally compatible, but let's find out.
He called upwards.
Ship, channel power to K-9, please.
There was a crackle of energy along the length of the tangled fibres. With a whining, buzzing noise, K-9's blaster beam returned to full strength. The Krag was held, frozen, its powerful form trapped in the red glare.
There we are, said the Doctor. All better.
He turned to Chris and indicated the door.
We'd better get on.
But we can't just leave it like this, protested Chris. Poor K-9.
Oh, he'll be fine, said the Doctor airily. Won't you, K-9?
Master!
Groaned K-9.
But what are we gonna do about it?
Spluttered Chris.
I'm sure I'll work something out, said the Doctor, when we get back.
Shouldn't we work something out now?
Asked Chris. The Doctor coughed.
Listen, I have a way of dealing with such situations. It's very complicated and very impressive, and I can't go into it now. Will you just trust me?
Chris nodded.
Okay. Then let's go.
The Doctor skirted carefully around the burning Krag and led the way through the smashed door and into the corridor that led to the airlock. Chapter 46.
Not only is this not a book,
said the Doctor's voice from the hollow screen,
but time is running backwards over it.
The screen showed the book in the Doctor's hand from the Doctor's point of view, with Claire looking anxiously at him beside the wrecked spectrograph. In front of the screen, Skagra held the actual book in one hand, the sphere in the other. He turned to Romana. Any hint of his earlier emotional display had been wiped away, and he was as smooth and casual as he had ever been.
Thank you, he said. You have helped to give me the answer. It is, of course, about time.
He indicated the TARDIS.
You will enter.
The Krags jostled Romana towards the police box. She'd never felt so desperate, and so alone. The control room, usually a place of humming warmth and security, now seemed cold and alien, despite the heat emanating from the two Krags that guarded her. Skagra followed and stood before the console. He held the book out towards the time column and turned the pages. Nothing happened. Romana gave a sigh of relief.
Looks like you were wrong again. Time for Plan B? Or is it Plan F by now?
Skagra paused for a moment. Then he closed the book and opened it again at the first page. He turned the page. The central column wheezed into life, jerking upwards. A cool green light came from deep beneath the column, something Romana had never seen there before. Skagra turned another page. The exterior doors slammed shut, the lights dimmed, turning the same pale, sickly green colour. Skagra turned another page. The navigation input panel burbled into life and a lever slammed over by itself. Skagra smiled. Exactly. The Doctor knew the answer, and so did you, buried deep in your subconsciouses. Time runs backwards over the book. So I turn the pages within the time field of this machine, and the machine operates. And turning the last page will take us to Shada. Chapter 47. The airlock door irised open. From the clean, cool interior of Skagra's ship,
Chris looked through into a dank, dingy corridor that matched the shabby exterior of the space station. The doctor marched through the door and into the corridor.
Come on!
Chris hovered in the doorway.
I suppose I ought to say something special. I mean, I am the first human being to travel into outer space.
The doctor shook his head.
I'm not the first?
Not even close, sorry.
Now come on.
Chris followed him. The corridor was rusted and decayed, illuminated only by dim, caged wall lights, and there were occasional creaking noises, like the sound of rending metal, that reminded Chris uncomfortably of just how close he was to millions of miles of vacuum.
I suppose it's safe?
He asked.
Yes, of course, it's totally unsafe, said the doctor,
his long legs taking him past doors marked Shuttle Bay 1 and Shuttle Bay 2 and into the belly of the station, his big booted footsteps thunking on the gridded metal plating of the floor and echoing away into the darkness. Chris hurried after him.
It's so hard to believe we just travelled hundreds of light years.
Why? Asked the doctor.
I always understood that you cannot travel faster than light, said Chris.
Says who?
Says Einstein, said Chris. What?
The doctor stopped and put an arm around Chris's shoulder.
Do you understand Einstein?
Chris wasn't sure where this was going.
Yes. What?
Gasped the doctor.
And quantum theory?
Yes, said Chris. He basked in the doctor's astonishment on firmer ground at last.
What?
Gasped the doctor.
And Planck?
Yes, said Chris.
What?
Gasped the doctor.
And Newton?
Yes, said Chris.
What?
Gasped the doctor.
And Schoenberg?
Chris paused. Was it a trick question? He recalled reading about the crisis of tonality. He thought he'd caught most of it, so he answered proudly.
Yes, of course.
The doctor whistled, apparently impressed. Then he said,
You've got an awful lot to unlearn, Bristol.
Chris sagged.
Back to normal, then.
They advanced down the corridor to a junction that led away to the right and into another dirty-looking corridor. There was a sign at the junction, a simple metal plaque, on which was written in bold, unfussy lettering, Foundation for Advanced Scientific Studies. Beneath that were another three letters, ASD. The doctor ran his fingers along the raised letters of the plaque, picking up a coating of dust.
Advanced Scientific Studies, he mused, but apparently no cleaning lady.
Chris ran his own fingers along the smaller row of letters beneath.
ASD, he said, thinking. Advanced state of decay by the look of it.
Suddenly the doctor raised a finger to his lips.
Shh!
Chris fell quiet. The doctor silently and carefully advanced a few steps down the second corridor. He listened intently for a few seconds, peering into the shadows, then turned back to Chris.
Did you hear anything?
More silence. The metal around them creaked like an old ship at sea.
Only that creaking, said Chris.
That's nothing to worry about, said the doctor.
Come on.
They set off along the second corridor. A thought struck Chris.
How could I read that sign? He asked. I mean, don't tell me that everyone in the universe speaks and writes in English. Of course not, said the doctor. The sign wasn't in English. But you've been in the TARDIS. She implanted a translation loop in your mind as a matter of course. Your TARDIS mucked about with my head, said Chris, slightly aggrieved. What were you saying about mind control?
It's a small courtesy, said the doctor. Nothing serious or evil. Chris boggled.
But a TARDIS can do that, alter the perceptions of the people inside it.
Only a very little, and only if the pilot instructs it, said the doctor.
And I'm the pilot. So it only does nice things.
They had now reached a large steel door. The doctor searched for an opening mechanism and couldn't find one. He pulled out his sonic screwdriver and twiddled it. There was a small puff of smoke, and the halves of the door trundled apart with a hydraulic wheeze.
You rely rather a lot on that thing, observed Chris.
It makes things quicker, said the doctor as he stepped through the door. I like quicker.
Chris followed him into a large room that seemed to be some kind of control chamber. The walls were covered in a complex array of technology, the purposes of which he could not even begin to guess at. In the center of the room was a tall hexagonal cone with a recessed, man-sized alcove in each of its six facets. On top was a spike, similar to the one Chris had seen next to the chair in Skagra's ship's command deck. But here, everything was inert. No flashing lights, no reassuring beeps and clicks from the machinery. The doctor approached the cone and stopped at one of the alcoves, reaching up to examine something by the headrest.
Aha! This is quite interesting. Quite interesting, spluttered Chris.
He paced around the room, examining the dead displays and controls.
This is fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
The doctor smiled. It's nice to see things through a human's eyes now and then. All these questions.
He poked Chris with a bony finger.
Go on, ask me another.
Chris waved a hand around the room and across at the cone.
Okay, does all this mean something to you?
The doctor hesitated. I think so, but it would be nice to have confirmation.
He raised the sonic screwdriver and headed for a particular control panel.
I'm going to rely heavily on this thing again.
He swept the sonic screwdriver across the panel. The console remained inert. This time no lights flashed, no electronics chattered.
It's dead?
Asked Chris. The doctor huffed.
Very definitely. No power response, and even if there was...
He tucked his fingers under the panel, and it came loose easily.
The circuitry has decayed, the computation matrix, everything.
He pulled out a set of what could, Chris thought, be circuit boards. He exerted the tiniest pressure, and the boards shattered into dust.
Accelerated entropy.
How can you accelerate entropy?
Spluttered Chris, again uneasily aware of the shifting, creaking noises all around them. Before the doctor could answer, there was a sudden, shattering crash. Chris whipped round. Through a dark interior doorway, he could see movement. Something was creeping towards them out of the darkness. Chapter 48. Claire was feeling a little better. Her watch had stopped, and the domed clock on the mantelpiece was, for some reason, running backwards and forwards and going up and down. But generally, the world was beginning to look more real and solid and sensible again. She accepted the teacup from the now solid and liver-spotted hand of Professor Chronotis as he sat down on the old settee across from her.
You said that you will be Professor Chronotis, she asked.
Did I? Said the professor.
Oh, yes, I wouldst have been going to have said that, I suppose.
He sighed.
Oh, goodness me, we Gallifreyans have never managed to come up with a satisfactory form of grammar to cover these situations.
Claire sipped her tea. It was sweet and milky.
And what kind of a situation is it exactly?
She ventured. She assumed that Gallifrey was a Greek island or somewhere similar. Chronotis sounded like a Greek name, after all, though his accent was definitely English. The professor supped at his own tea and waved his hand about the room as if the answer was obvious.
Timelessness, he said.
Timelessness? Asked Claire. Much as she had taken to this nice old man, she was starting to worry for his sanity. She recalled Chris's description of him. Balmy, senile. The professor nodded.
Quite. Timelessness, as in standing obliquely to the time fields.
Oh, said Claire. That's what we're doing, is it?
Oh, yes, said the professor. Or sitting, anyway.
He leaned forward and patted her hand.
and I'm very grateful to you for arranging it, young lady.
Claire shrugged.
Well, at least I could do. Though all I did do was press a button.
And by pressing that button, you activated the emergency program, said the professor. After a little gentle nudging in your perception field by my TARDIS.
TARDIS? Asked Claire, looking past him to the outer door that led to sanity.
Yes, I know. Barely call it a TARDIS, can you?
Said the professor, looking around the room.
A Type 12, in fact.
Very ancient.
I rescued it literally from the scrap heaps. I'm not officially allowed to have one, you know.
Really, are you not? Said Claire.
Still, just as well I did, said the professor. Or I'd still be dead.
Still be dead? Claire had a jolting memory of how he'd transformed from a ghost into a solid person. She dismissed it. She must have imagined it after that knock on the head. Then she looked at the upright bookcase. What knock on the head?
Yes, I've been killed, the professor went on. But the emergency program, which is a very naughty thing I'm not allowed to have either, means that you tangled with my time fields at the critical moment. You sent us into a temporal orbit back through last Thursday night and into the vortex, I think. That's why I'm dressed like this, you see. Excuse the impropriety.
Claire stared at him, amazed at the garbage he was coming out with. It must sound so real to him, she thought sadly.
You're not following me, are you? He asked.
No, said Claire. The professor nodded.
Good. You just think of me as a paradox in an anomaly and get on with your tea.
Claire finished her tea and put the cup down.
I think I'd better be going, actually, Professor.
Oh, I'm afraid there's absolutely no chance of that, said the professor casually. Not now, anyway.
Claire made her way to the door.
I'd better find Chris and the doctor.
Yes, we'd better had, said the professor. But you won't find them out there, my dear.
Claire turned the knob of the door that led into the little vestibule. It was firmly locked.
Please, Professor, she said, open this door.
I can't, he said, and you certainly can't.
Claire squared her shoulders.
Oh, come on, Professor, the joke is over.
The professor stood up and crossed to the nearest windows.
The joke is far from over, young lady, he said. Would you care to see the punchline?
He threw back the curtains dramatically. Beyond them, Claire saw the twisting, howling blue maelstrom of the space-time vortex.
Chapter 49. Skagra stood looking up through the observatory at the infinite stars. Romana, still under the guard of a pair of watchful Krags, wondered what was going on in his head. The Krag commander stomped through the mass of his fellows towards Skagra.
First wave of generations is complete, my lord,
it said.
Good,
said Skagra. He tapped the book in his hand.
I have found the key, as anticipated. You will make all necessary preparations for the entry into Shada, and then begin second generation for the activation of the universal mind.
My lord,
said the Krag commander. It stomped away.
The universal mind,
scoffed Romana. Skagra turned to her.
Exactly.
Romana believed she still had one option available to her. It was something she'd learnt from the doctor. Irritating the enemy, exposing any weaknesses of their psychology.
Why don't you just kill me, Skagra? She said.
Your reaction will interest me, said Skagra.
My reaction to what?
Skagra tapped the book again.
Your reaction to meeting one of the greatest criminals in your history.
Saliavin? Romana shook her head.
Saliavin died thousands of years ago, and even you can't fly the TARDIS back across the Gallifreyan time stream to meet him.
Tell me how Saliavin died, said Skagra.
Romana considered. I don't know.
Skagra nodded.
A triple Alpha Plus graduate of the Pridon College in the Academy on Gallifrey, and you don't know. How peculiar.
Romana thought back to Skagra's earlier boast about the book and the role it had once played in the administration of Gallifreyan justice. Nowadays, or at least in the last few thousand years, the very few evil renegades about, such as Morbius and Zetar, had been sentenced to vaporization. But she had no idea what had befallen the criminals of earlier generations on Gallifrey. For some reason, the impulse to wonder about it had never crossed her mind, and even now she felt a vague sense of apprehension at the question.
Perhaps, said Skagra, the Time Lords wanted to forget, to assuage their consciences. They wanted to obliterate all memory of what they had done, wipe it from their history.
He gestured to his collection of Gallifreyan texts.
But it was all in there, still intact, undrawned.
What was there? Romana felt an almost overwhelming impulse to fight her own curiosity, as if this was a question that should never be answered.
Can't you work it out for yourself?
Asked Skagra.
The Book of the Law sentenced Saliavin,
said Romana slowly, each word sounding a death knell deep in the back of her mind.
But what was his punishment?
Skagra coaxed her.
Imprisonment?
Suggested Romana.
Skagra nodded. Correct. In Sharda, the ancient prison of the Time Lords.
Romana shuddered. The words hit her like a physical attack. If this was true, and somehow she just knew it was, she could at last begin to guess at the ultimate nature of Skagra's great scheme. She pointed to the sphere.
The universal mind,
she gasped. Skagra nodded.
My mind.
Chapter 50.
Claire's head was spinning again. She had a million pressing questions, but didn't know which one to ask first, or how to understand the likely replies. She had established that Chris was probably safe, and probably with the doctor, and this Ramona girl, but the deeper details eluded her. As far as she could begin to grasp it, the professor's suite of rooms was also an alien capsule for travelling through space and time, and the professor himself was an alien. It seemed Gallifrey was not a Greek island after all, but the home planet of a race called the Time Lords. Furthermore, the professor's space-time craft, which he called a TARDIS, was at present stuck in something called a temporal orbit, which had sent itself and both of them back to Thursday night, or, as the professor more accurately said, a state of Thursday nightness. She abandoned her last objections to this idea when she looked in a mirror and saw that the perm she'd washed out on Friday night was well and truly back. I suppose it's a time perm, she said wistfully.
That is the correct technical term, yes, said the professor abstractedly. Unfortunately, the temporal orbit did not bring the book back in here. I suppose it must stand outside time, or it couldst have must have did has.
Mention of the book made the professor rather agitated.
We must find Skagra. He's got the book,
he kept repeating, looking worriedly between the brass control console of his capsule and the window view that now showed not the neat green lawns sloping down to the backs, but the dazzling infinity of space and time.
"I thought the book might be dangerous," said Claire.
"It is," cried the professor, "very dangerous, and I have been very careless with it."
He mopped his brow.
"I've been such a stupid old fool."
"But why is it so dangerous?" asked Claire.
The professor hesitated.
"I cannot say."
Claire put her hands on her hips, in a gesture that she had used unconsciously since the age of 8 to terrify men.
"I think I deserve an explanation. I saved your life, didn't I?"
The professor stared at her through his spectacles and seemed to reach a decision.
"Quite right, young lady. What does the secret matter now? It's best that you know before the trials that lie ahead."
Claire felt a sinking sensation at the mention of danger, but then she remembered the books that had fallen onto the floor earlier. Adventures! Wasn't that what she'd always wanted?
"So, what is the book's secret?" she asked.
The professor drew himself up and spoke slowly, as if he could not quite believe he was telling her words out loud.
"It is the key to Sharda."
"Oh,"
said Claire.
"The ancient prison of the Time Lords," said Chronotis heavily.
"Oh, I see," said Claire.
"Of course, the Time Lords have all forgotten about it," said Chronotis. "All except me."
"Oh,"
said Claire again. The professor bit a fingernail. Claire was astonished to see that his eyes were beginning to fill with tears.
"And if this Skagra is meddling with mind transference, he is only going to Sharda for one reason, and it is imperative that he be stopped."
He crossed decisively to the brass control panel.
"But where to start? How to start?"
Claire followed him over.
"And what's in Sharda that's so dangerous?" she asked.
"It's not a matter of what," said the professor, taking off his spectacles and wiping his eyes with a handkerchief. "It's a matter of who."
End of disc 6.